Hello and welcome to the September 29th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you from Alaska's capital city and KTOO. It's a beautiful day in Alaska, in Juno. We've got a great show. We'll be talking about tomorrow's evening at Egan at UAS, about a Salsa Ruida dance workshop tomorrow night, a chamber music concert on Saturday. Hospice and Home Care of Juno will be here to highlight October's grief support group, and ending with Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney. Now that's a good show, thanks to Jeff Brown. We'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In our continued coverage of the White House Tribal Nations Conference, which took place this week in the nation's capital, we're focusing on federal funding. Matt Laszlo has the story.
As Congress reached a deal to fund the federal government through the election, just down the street, tribal leaders were meeting, and many were talking about how their tribe's needs continue to go unfunded by Congress. Jackie Payton is the executive director of the National Congress of American Indians.
You know, as we move forward, we're always concerned about the budget and the resources that come forward, and the ongoing engagement of tribal leaders in a nation-to-nation relationship, an elevated representation of representative dialogue.
This year, tribal sovereignty, and especially land issues, seem to be the main issue of the conference. But land issues are also budget issues, according to many tribal leaders. David Ginsaw Sr. of the Yurok Tribe in Northern California says they need federal dollars to help protect their land, but especially their water.
You know, we're in a place where along the Klamath River to protect our water and our resources. We have growers, you know, and so we're in like our third, fourth year of eradications, you know, to save our drinking water and our river for our fish.
Ginsaw says because the state and federal government have been giving special use of their river to farmers, their tribe then has to spend more money cleaning their water, which takes money away from schools and law enforcement priorities.
The growers, they harness up thousands and thousands of gallons of water, that cold water refusion that can go in for fish, and it's our drinking water. You know, and you have all this toxic herbicides, pesticides, and all this that goes into our river system.
Just as tribal leaders are bemoaning how the federal government is dealing with their sacred sites, they're also bemoaning the lack of resources coming from Washington. But to many, the problems are two different sides of the same coin. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A long emotional battle has ended for hundreds of former students of Indian residential schools in Newfoundland and Labrador. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a provincial Supreme Court judge approved a class action settlement after a two-day hearing.
That settlement with the Canadian government is worth $50 million. It was reached in May, but required judicial approval before any money could be paid out. And with the expedited ruling, payments can begin once the 30-day appeal period ends. It also comes 10 years after the fight began and 8 years after former Prime Minister Stephen Harper refused to include Newfoundland and Labrador from a national apology and compensation package. Emma Reelis is a residential school survivor in the province. She says the settlement has brought mixed emotions.
There's a lot of people that have gone with no closure to their lives, and a lot of people who couldn't cope with what happened to them, and they probably committed suicide or drank themselves to death or whatever happened to them.
There are about 800 to 1,000 people, most of them Inuit or Innu, who were part of the class action. They now want an apology from the Prime Minister, and there are indications that Justin Trudeau might make that apology in the spring. Students who lived at the schools for at least 5 years will be eligible for about $15,000 to $20,000 in compensation. In addition, compensation for sexual or physical abuse could be as much as $200,000 and must be based on sworn testimony. The government will also contribute for healing programs to be guided by Aboriginal leaders. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In New Mexico, the Santa Fe City Council voted Wednesday to declare the second Monday of every October as Indigenous Peoples Day. The resolution acknowledges Santa Fe's history with the 23 Indian communities in the state and recognizes their value and contributions. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 5 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He does everything to make this happen. And hey, it's really sunny and 53 degrees on September 29th in Juneau, Alaska. So it is a great day. It's supposed to be sunny throughout the weekend. We do have a high wind warning in effect from September 30th at 1 a.m., so that's tonight, until 4 p.m. So, high wind warning. And also, it's supposed to be really good northern lights tonight, a 6 on the northern light meter, or according to my husband's app, or something along those lines. Anyway, let's get going here. We have Dr. Brian Buma in the studio with us. He's a professor over at UAS, right out the road. And he's here to talk about Evening at Egan, which is a Friday night iconic series that happens out at the university in the fall. And he'll be speaking tomorrow night on climate change and the Southeast Alaskan woods. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So what do you teach at UAS?
I teach forest ecology primarily. So I teach upper division forest ecology and lower division forest ecology. And I also teach classes on sustainable resource management and landscape ecology.
That sounds cool. Yeah. And you've been teaching out there for 4 years?
This is my fourth year, exactly.
And you hail from Colorado and Washington?
Yeah, I am originally from Bellingham, Washington, other end of the ferry, and then I did my graduate work in Colorado, so I lived there quite a while as well before coming up back to the Northwest to Juneau.
Okay, and here you are talking about our Southeast Alaskan woods and climate change tomorrow night. What time is this?
It'll be at 7.
Okay, 7 o'clock at the library.
At the library, yeah.
At UAS.
Egan Library.
Egan Library. Yeah. At the library. And what can people expect when they come?
Well, we're going to go through two studies we've been doing over the past 4 years. One on yellow cedar, an iconic forest, or iconic tree species in our forests, and one on the forest as a whole. So climate change is obviously hitting Alaska pretty hard, and it's getting southeast as well. Last couple winters, we haven't had a lot of snow, as many skiers will attest. And that's having some pretty big impacts on our forest. Not all negative. There's a variety of impacts. And so I'm going to walk folks through a couple studies we've done looking at those effects.
So you've been doing a study research for 4 years on this topic?
Yeah, we've been working on this for a while, but it really isn't me, just me. In fact, some of these things have been studied since the 80s by folks that have lived in Juneau. And really, there's a huge body of work done by the Forest Service lab here in Juneau that has made all this stuff possible. I suppose I came along at the end and get to present. But an amazing amount of work has been done by folks that still live in Juneau, like Paul Hennen and Dave DeMore and a variety of folks that have done a lot of good research in Southeast for decades.
Okay, that sounds great. So I don't want you to give away your speech for tomorrow night, which is climate change in the Southeast Alaskan woods. So I'll ask you some other questions, like where did you do your research and what was that like?
Sure. So there's really two types of research I'll be talking about. One is field work. So we do a lot of field work, which is going out into the woods and measuring trees and counting dead trees and counting live trees and all those sorts of things. And a lot of that's done in Juneau on the road system. There's some interesting areas around town where we have active migration going on of tree species as they're moving north. A lot of the field work is also done around Cake. We do a lot of work on Cake. And just last week, I was on Prince of Wales, North Prince of Wales, looking at areas where yellow cedar is declining and where other species are coming in.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. Active migration for trees, what does that really mean?
Right, so they're not exactly picking up and walking, but Certainly as the climate shifts, the range of trees shifts with it, or the climate and that can support trees shifts. And so every generation, trees spread their seed, and so presumably as the climate warms and more northerly latitudes become suitable for tree species, those species will begin to slowly expand their range north. And that's what we're seeing around town. We're seeing some yellow cedar stands that apparently established since the Little Ice Age in the past couple hundred years, ahead of sort of the main body of yellow cedar.
Fascinating. So you talked about working here in Juneau on the road system, mm-hmm. and then Cake and Prince mm-hmm. of Wales. So trees from, let's say, the southernmost tip of what you were talking about, Prince of Wales, to here, is there a marked difference between the trees because of the distance?
There's a difference in the species that you find, yeah. If you go down to Prince of Wales, for example, you'll find red cedar, which we don't have in Juneau. It'll grow here just fine. I mean, people grow it in their yards, but we don't have red cedar growing naturally around here. The range of red cedar cuts off somewhere around Cake, or somewhere in Cake, basically, so about halfway. So yeah, the tree species are quite a bit different. It appears that many species are still migrating north from the last ice age, in fact. So we have a lot of northern range edges of tree species in southeast Alaska. Kind of interesting to watch.
The end of the line for them, you
end
would
of
say.
The, well.
Maybe.
Or the starting line, depending on your perspective.
Yeah, depending on how the wind blows. Yes. All right, if you're just joining us, I'm chatting with Dr. Brian Buma from UAS. He's going to do a speech tomorrow night, evening at Egan, Climate Change and the Southeast Alaskan Woods, a presentation. So you are a forest ecologist.
Mm-hmm.
You teach sustainable resource management and forest ecology mm-hmm. at UAS. You have your PhD. Before I let you go, what would you say to people who are listening that are concerned about climate change, what they could do to make a difference?
Oh, that's a good question. There's lots. Certainly at the individual level around here, it's simply a matter of being responsible about your resource use. I mean, we have a lot of good renewable resources in southeast Alaska. I mean, Juneau's on hydropower, which is a great, great thing, and people have the opportunity to use biomass for heating their homes. You know, there's a lot of driving around town. People can ride their bikes or take the transit. That's very useful. I mean, when it comes down to dealing with climate change, it's really a matter of individuals spending their money and spending the resources they have in a responsible way. You know, in our society, basically spending a dollar is like a vote in our society. And so spend your dollars wisely, spend your votes wisely.
So you're talking about the car you drive, the way in which you heat your house, the electricity that you consume, or maybe not because of the hydropower? Or?
Well, you know, a lot of people don't have a choice in where their electricity necessarily comes from, and I think Juneau's doing great. Alaska in general has a lot of opportunities to be a leader in sustainable energy production. We have a lot of little cities that are, off the grid and unfortunately often powered by diesel, but many groups are working really hard to improve that. And utilize wind power, tidal power, biomass power.
Okay.
I'm optimistic.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Optimism is really good. And one last question. So what about this? I'm going to make you the subject matter expert here. What about unplugging devices you're not using? Is that really important?
Well, they certainly still use power when they're plugged in. At least many, I can't speak for all devices, but many devices still use power when they're plugged in.
So
they are still charging power, and they're not using it particularly efficiently.
So every time you shut down your computer, you should unplug it. Every time you're not using your printer, every time you're
I
not
generally
using
do.
Your
I
TV.
Mean, the transformer is still running in the plug. And, I mean, you can hear it in mine. Maybe I have an old computer, but you can hear the thing running.
Turn me off.
Maybe that's what it's saying.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I will neither confirm nor deny whether I unplug or leave my devices plugged in. I just wanted to ask that question. So thank you, Dr. Brian Buma. Tomorrow evening at Egan, 7 p.m. at the library, mm-hmm. UAS Library, mm-hmm. Egan Library, and it's climate change and our very own backyard, the Southeast Alaskan Woods. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We're going to take a short break, and then we'll have our next guest.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 29th of September, 2016. It's the birthday of Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra, born near Madrid, 1547. We know him by his pen name Miguel de Cervantes, author of what's considered to be the first modern novel and the first bestseller, Don Quixote. He published the first part in 1605 and the second part a decade later, just a year before his death, in 1616. It's the birthday of Elizabeth Gaskell, born in London, 1810. She was the wife of a Unitarian minister in Manchester, so she tended to the poor, she taught Sunday school, she kept cows, pigs, poultry, raised children, kept the house. After the death of her infant son from scarlet fever, left her bereft, her husband suggested that she try writing to soothe her sorrow. So she began writing novels about the people in poverty around her, novels including Mary Barton in 1848, Lizzie Lee, 1850, North and South, Wives and Daughters. Charles Dickens was a fan of her work. She was close friends with Charlotte Bronte, and after Charlotte Bronte died, Gaskell wrote the biography, The Life of Charlotte Bronte, in 1857, which scholars still today consider the definitive work on Bronte's life. It's the birthday of the physicist Enrico Fermi, born in Rome, 1901, the first to use Einstein's theory of relativity to build the first functioning nuclear reactor, and he went on to help build the atom bomb. He left Italy, came to the U.S. with his wife, who was Jewish, got a job at the University of Chicago, where he built the first nuclear reactor on a squash court under the stands of the football stadium, and conducted the first nuclear reaction on the morning of December 2nd, 1942. The same morning, the State Department announced that 2 million Jews had been killed in Europe and 5 million more were in danger. And 3 years later, in the desert outside of Los Alamos, New Mexico, Fermi watched as the first atomic bomb was exploded. Here's a poem for today by Lawrence Robb, Original Sin. That was one idea my mother always disliked. She preferred her God to be reasonable, like Emerson or Thoreau, without their stranger moments. Even the Old Testament God's sudden angers and twisted ways of getting what he wanted, she'd accept as metaphor. But original sin was different. Plus, no one agreed if it was personal, meaning all Adam's fault, or else some kind of temporary absence of the holy, which was Adam's fault as well. In any case, it made no sense that we'd need to be saved before we'd even had the chance to be wrong. Yes, eventually everyone falls into error, but when my sister and I were babies, she could see we were perfect as we opened our eyes and gazed up at her with what she took for granted as love, long before either of us knew the word and what damage it could cause. Original Sin, a poem by Lawrence Robb, from Mistaking Each Other for Ghosts, published by Tupelo Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Support for this programming is provided by Mary Becker, District 1 candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly in the October 4th municipal election, paid for by Becker for Assembly.
It is 20 minutes after the hour on September 29th. Yes, it is 53 degrees. It's a beautiful day in Alaska's capital city. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. Jeff Brown is at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis. In the studio, we have Bruce Patella and a visiting guest, Cesar Griffiez from Los Angeles,
Hi.
Who is here to do a salsa rueda dance workshop. I'm hoping
yeah, salsa rueda, that's right.
Welcome to Juneau. I already told him, all you Juneauites, that it's always like this. Sunny and lovely. 53 is probably cold for a Cesar from
it,
LA.
I like it.
Yeah. So let's start with the very basic. Salsa rueda, what is it?
Well, salsa rueda, or most people probably just know it as salsa. Salsa is a partner form, so you do it with a partner, but you also do it in a circle with a lot of other dancers. So there's a bunch of couples in a circle, and we're able to exchange partners and pass on your partner and do patterns and turns with a caller who calls it. So in this case, I would be the caller, right? So I'm instructing. I would be calling the calls. Most of them are in Spanish, you know, so then I do teach what it means and how to do it. And then, you know, it's a grand old time. People love it.
That sounds great. Okay, so it sounds very difficult. You're dancing with a partner, and you're also dancing in a circle, and you're taking
Yeah, you're constantly switching, so you don't get bored with the same partner, and you learn how to be a great leader and a great follower, whichever one your interest is in, and it's a great time just to be with people. It makes it less hard to learn, you know, like you're not worried about, oh, did I get this right? There's a flow that develops because everybody's in it.
And then you always have an opportunity to start over again.
Absolutely. And the music is so upbeat. The movements gets those endorphins really going. And even though Cesar is describing that the calls are in Spanish, several of them come from a sport that we share in common, baseball.
Yeah.
So we'll have un fly.
Yeah, those are all, Cuba has a national sport, baseball. So they do a lot of references to baseball, and also some of the calls actually make fun of Westerner life and that kind of stuff, you know. So they have a lot of fun.
Salsa rueda, a Cuban dance form?
Yes,
oh,
Cuban.
Okay.
So it goes right along. In Cuba, they don't differentiate between, what they call casino de rueda, because it developed in the 50s when Cuba was a big, tourist with all the gambling, all the casinos. And that was one of the tourist attractions that they used to sell to tourists, how to dance salsa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here we are in Juneau. We could do the same thing. So, Bruce, tell us about the logistics of the workshop. Where is it? How much is it? And how do we sign up?
The workshop will be held at the old Marie Drake School, which is now Montessori Borealis School, between the high school and Harborview in the gym. Starting tomorrow evening, our first session is at 7 o'clock, and then we'll have three sessions on Saturday, one at 10 o'clock, one at 1:30, and the final one of the day at 3 o'clock, and then again on Sunday afternoon at 1:30 and 3. And in each case, we're hoping to progress in terms of the calls, but Cesar will be reviewing the calls that he's done in the previous session, so we just get more comfortable with doing the dances. Even though it's a couple dance, we're not telling people that they have to have a partner to get there. We typically have folks who don't have a partner, and we don't want to discourage people from being there.
Yeah. Also, and if you haven't attended a previous one, it's great to just jump in and learn. It helps beginners help the people who already know to better lead, better follow. So it's not like you have to know what happened beforehand to be able to join in.
Okay.
The charge is $10 per person. We have no pre-registration whatsoever. It's just show up at the door. We want to start at 7, so we'd ask people to get there a little early on tomorrow evening. And with each of our sessions, people should just wear loose-fitting, comfortable clothing. They're going to work up a little bit of a sweat, and we'd encourage people not to wear heels. There's a bit of turning as well, and we want people to have a good time, and that's really what it's about.
So I shouldn't wear my fry boots and jam it down into somebody's foot. So I have so many questions. So it's a weekend-long workshop. Can you go a la carte, or do you have to go to all the classes, or how does it work?
It will be a la carte. I mean, that's just the nature of Juno. But our hope is that people will get so hooked tomorrow night that they'll want to stay for it. I have to say that's what happened to me.
And how did you guys meet?
Stockton Folk Dance Camp in Stockton, California. And
he was my best student.
And well, he says that, but I got there, and Salsa Rueda was not on my mind at all. But I signed up for it, and I was immediately hooked, both by the music, by the dance form, and charmed by the teacher. And Cesar is just a wonderful person, wonderful instructor, and he really makes the dance accessible to everyone.
Okay, so it starts 7 o'clock, Marie Drake, on Friday night. Is there some place online where people could find out more information?
Yes, there. First, online is GIF Dancers, Juno International Folk Dancers, but it's GIF, J-I-F, dancers.org. And people will find the schedule there and also a little bio on Cesar. People can also, if they have questions, call 364-2334.
Okay, that sounds great. So it's Friday night, 3 sessions on Saturday, and
2 on Sunday.
2 on Sunday. All right, and I guess there might be some dancing afterwards, too, I would imagine, if you have the energy.
there will be.
Will definitely at least want to practice what they just learned, for sure.
So we actually really learn it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, people will
sure
want
to practice. Tells me, but.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have to go. Well, thanks so much for coming
in.
And it sounds like a great weekend. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. That is all about the Cuban Salsa Workshop this weekend. But it's fall. There's always lots of things to do in Juno. And our next guests, Sally Schlichting and Mark Calvert, are here to talk about the Chamber Music Concert. And I think it's Saturday night. Is that correct?
It is. Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Saturday night at 8, Sunday afternoon at 3.
Same show both times.
Yes.
Great.
That's
so
right.
Let's talk about it. What's the Fall Chambers Music Concert?
Well, it's part of a new series of chamber music concerts called the Combrio Series, something I've started. And this particular concert is a fundraiser for Juno Alaska Music Matters, which is a wonderful program for youth here in Juno.
Also known as the JAM program.
That's correct.
An award-winning program, nationally
That's
award-winning
right.
program.
Yes.
So what is... chamber music?
Chamber music? Well, it's usually a very small arrangement of instrumentalists and singers in settings of, say, solos, trios, quartets, often with piano.
And this program?
And this program features music for tenor, flute, strings, and piano.
That sounds lovely. Where's it going to be?
It's going to be at Northern Light United Church.
Okay, and Mark Calbert is here, and he is singing, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, I'm singing on a couple pieces. I'm going to do, there's this wonderful song cycle by Beethoven that I'm going to perform with Luke Weld, who is a great pianist here in town.
Outstanding.
Luke can really play, like I say, my dad used to say, soup to nuts. Luke can play it all. So, yeah, so it's a beautiful, about 12, 13-minute song cycle. Six songs that are all wound together into one big song, and then we're going to do a trio together. Sally and I and Megan are going to do a trio together.
Yeah, Megan Johnson on cello, so we're going to do a trio.
This sounds so lovely. Mm. It sounds so, I don't know, melodic and beautiful.
Yeah, I'm delighted to play with Luke as well on the Sonata for Flute and Piano by Francis Poulenc, too, which is a great piece as well. So, and then... let's see what else we have. We have Luke and Megan and I are going to play these four songs by Andre Previn in lieu of the soprano. I'm going to play the vocal line on the flute, and those are a really wonderful set of pieces, another song cycle. Very jazzy in places because Andre Previn was really a lover of jazz. And then the program wraps up with... the last movement of the Schubert Trout Quintet.
I have some questions. So, you know, I think a lot of people hear words and we just assume, that's why I asked what a chamber concert is and so on and so forth, chamber music is. What's a song cycle? So I could just assume that I know what that is, but I don't know if I really do.
Let me take that one on,
Sally.
You bet.
Well, actually, this is the first song cycle that was ever written in modern days, say from the 1700s on. And song cycle is a group of songs that they're really meant to be performed together. Often they tell a story or they tell something in chronological order. And Beethoven wrote this one, I think, in like 1816. And it's really kind of the same, it's a variation on the same thing. It's called To the Distant Beloved. It's in German. And it's just meant to be performed together. So... it's kind of like I'd say it's a 19th century version of going to the movies.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
So what are the logistics one more time? So it's at Northern Lights. It's Saturday night at what time?
Saturday night at 8 p.m. And Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m.
Okay.
Both performances are free. We are accepting donations, though, for Juneau, Alaska Music Matters.
Okay. Yeah. And for people who don't know what the... Juneau, Alaska Music Matters. Can you speak a little bit about that program?
Sure thing. It serves about 600 kids in several elementary schools, and it helps them build leadership skills. It's of course they learn how to read music, and they learn on, I believe, cardboard violins. And they learn teamwork and all kinds of interpersonal skills as well as music.
You know, I was telling Sally before we walked in here, even though I'm not personally involved with JAM, I've watched from afar for years, and I'm really in awe because what Lori Hege does over there is really on the cutting edge of what is done in America. She was one of the first people in America to bring, it was called El Sistema in Venezuela, to bring it into America, and the work she does is incredible.
And now
it's incredible.
And she's really expanding it now. So she's partnered with the university, and now she has master's students coming in to learn how to start an El Sistema program. And four of those current and former MAT students will be performing in the program.
That sounds great.
And I think these skills the kids are learning, you know, these skills, I call them like soft skills. I mean, there are other terms for it. These are really the skills that are going to help them get through life, really to be good human beings. Okay. And they're going to become good musicians in the course of that, too. So
yeah, Lori Hege, who's done this, is just a tremendous, she's just tremendous at it. So.
Yeah. Groundbreaking right here in Juneau.
It
started at Glacier Valley Elementary.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So local local. So it sounds great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so 8 o'clock on Saturday at Northern Lights, 3 o'clock. Sounds like a lovely, beautiful event with some stunning song cycles, mm-hmm. which now I know exactly what it is. And it's a fundraiser for the local jam program. So thank you both for all that you do, making our lives so musical and wonderful here in Juneau.
Thanks, John.
And, so get out and see that. We're all going to have to make some hard decisions about where we're going to put ourselves.
But
at least there's
fall.
2, 8 o'clock and
right.
3 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
European starlings arrived in North America in the 19th century, but they've lived side by side with humans since way before then. In the European starlings' native range of Europe and Western Asia, people have been farming, herding, and erecting settlements for millennia. And starlings have adapted alongside them, finding nest cavities in buildings and flocking around any agricultural activity that might promise seeds, fruit, or a bounty of insect prey. We know for certain that starlings were present in great numbers in ancient Rome. They swarmed in massive flocks of the kind we today call murmurations, thousands of individuals cascading and folding in awe-inspiring geometric patterns in the sky. Roman augurs, or diviners, scrutinized these patterns for signs of how the gods were feeling that day. Divination was crucial for major decision-making. If there was a key battle in the offing or political intrigue brewing, the augurs looked to the skies, taking the auspices, it was called, to see if the gods gave or withheld their approval. Some flock patterns offered more auspicious signs or omens than others. From time to time, it may have seemed like the future of Rome itself hung on the correct reading of the movements of these very common but highly adaptable birds. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Join the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association and KXLL for Femme Fatale, a fundraising weekend with Alaska's hottest drag performers. Friday, September 30th, see your neighbors light up the rendezvous stage at Locals Night. Saturday, watch Anchorage's headlining divas at the Rockwell Ballroom. All proceeds benefit the 4A services in Southeast Alaska. Tickets and information at alaskanaids.org.
Did you know that 1 out of 3 Americans has prediabetes and doesn't know it? Prediabetes puts you at risk for developing type 2 diabetes, which can lead to complications like glaucoma and kidney disease. The good news is you can prevent diabetes by acting early. Learn your risk for prediabetes by taking a short quiz at diabetes.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association. Aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
This year's Karen and Spotlight series kicks off with indie folk songwriter duo Dave McGraw and Mandy Fair.
If I ever get out of here, see the light of day.
Together, their exceptional vocal harmonies coupled with Fair's guitar work have become a vehicle to carry them around the world and now returning to the Goldtown Nickelodeon on October 5th. Tickets are at KRNN.org, the station, and the door. Show starts promptly at 7. That's Dave McGraw and Mandy Fair on October 5th at the Goldtown Nick.
It is 20 minutes to the hour. It's September 29th. It is 56 degrees right now, up 3 degrees from when I started the show.
Steamy.
It's a beautiful day in Alaska's capital city. You're listening to Juno Afternoon Live. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And Nancy DeCherney, the executive director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, is here to tell you what to do this weekend.
Well, since it's going to be a lovely weekend, I don't really have to give you too many options, but we have too many options, as you pointed out.
Very well said.
All right. So, for example, this evening you could be learning doing Cuban salsa with Alejandro and friends at the Rockwell Ballroom, and then moving on from that to tango dancing. So that's fun. Good. It's a nice evening for that. There's silk painting, I believe. There's West Coast swing dancing at the Imperial Bar. So it's kind of a dancing night. Just keep dancing. On Friday, we have free Tai Chi for seniors out at the Greening Park Community Room. And at noon, we have the theater organ concerts. And at 5:30, there's a yoga book club. It's away from... I can't remember the author, but the book is called Away from Darkness. It's free. It's a potluck, and you don't have to do yoga. They want to discuss the book, actually.
Where is that?
It's out on...
The Yoga Path?
The Yoga Path, yes.
Out by Kausko.
Yes.
Interesting. The Yoga Book Club. Yeah. You have to balance the book. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, it's a nice opportunity. So you can go on our website, which is jahc.org, and get the author of the book and see more about what they've got planned. Louise Miller, Fine Arts Studio, she's always doing these fun evening events, Birds on a Branch Painting Party. It's a BYOB. So, hey, come on down.
That sounds lovely. Where's that?
Again, you need to get the address from the website.
Sounds fun.
I don't have that. Learn to Skate, 6:30 to 7:30. This is for youth and adults over at the Treadwell Arena. The evening at Egan is Climate Change and the Southeast Alaska Woods.
We chatted with him.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Sounds interesting or depressing or something.
No, he's optimistic.
Is he? Oh, okay, excellent. I prefer that. Introduction to Salsa Rueda. There's a whole weekend of salsa dancing.
We spoke with Cesar. Is here from L.A. with Bruce Patel. There's a whole weekend. It sounds fantastic. And the Marie Drake.
Which is, between Harborview and on JDHS. There's also a football game. Doesn't this seem like
which
a
one? Bears or Falcons?
It's Thunder Mountain versus JDHS.
Wow, double trouble.
A perfectly good weekend for a football game.
It is.
And at 8 p.m., and it's going to be at the Thunder Mountain field. So at 8 p.m. on Friday night, it's the Femme Fatale's Locals Night at the Rendezvous. And at 10 p.m., you can meander over to Salt, and it's Salt After Dark. So there. You don't
what
have
is
to wait.
That?
I don't know. I haven't been. It's past my bedtime.
She's at home eating her Wheaties for the next day.
Really. Saturday morning, 8:30 to 9:30, Pilates Core with Abby at the Yoga Path. And 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you go pick up your rotary bulbs. In case you didn't remember to order rotary bulbs, they will have extra. So you can go get them at the AELNP garage, which is over by the Anton's garden.
It's a good planting day.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful, and their bulbs are wonderful. So, and the Rotary uses their funds to support things like parks and all sorts of stuff in the community.
Scholarships.
So, yeah, so that's a good thing. So then we go on to some more Salsa Rueda. It starts at 10 in the morning. We have Learning to Skate for Tots and Youth at 11:45 over at the Treadwell Arena. From noon to 1, there is a small Gyak language learners group. I need to learn that word. But that's at the Edward Thomas Building over by the hospital, I think. Ice Cream with Kate Troll from 1 to 3 out at the Mendenhall Valley Library. It's Copa ice cream. I mean, really. So there. And then from 3 to 5, some more Salsa Rueda. And then there's an inside passage. Daughters of the American Revolution has a monthly meeting, and they have tips for finding your ancestors with a woman who does genealogy work.
Oh, that sounds
Teresa
interesting.
Teresa Campbell. It's over at the Douglas Library, 3 to 4:30 on Saturday. There's an open studio from 4:45 to 6:45 at the Canvas. Real Rock 11 at Centennial Hall. This is a fundraising event for the Rock Dump. There's a beer garden and a silent auction, and there's tickets online at therockdump.com. And that's from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday night. Rolling with the Homies. This is a fundraiser for the Canvas. It's a 90s party, and they're going to have prizes for the best costumes, the worst dance moves, many more things. So it sounds like a lot of fun to support the Canvas from 7 to 10 on Saturday night. I don't know how you're going to pick, Joan. I really don't.
I have no idea. And then there's the chamber concert at 8.
Well, at 7:30, we have the Gold Street Music Concert over at Resurrection Lutheran Church. And that's got the Huckleberry Pickers, Henry and Eric Hopkins, the Last Chance Jazz Band. And the proceeds for this one support the food programs that the Resurrection Lutheran Church sponsors. And then, as you mentioned, from 8 to 10, the Conbrio Chamber Series for the Love of Music. And you were just speaking with them. This is a wonderful thing that they have organized once a month for more or less with benefits going some to, like this one's for the jam program.
It is.
And then others of them will be for the piano for our new building. So, but you do have two opportunities to hear the Conbrio.
3 o'clock on Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, so you don't have to do everything on Saturday.
Because there's also a drag show, Anchorage.
The drag show, which is on Saturday night, Femme Fatale's, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so I
don't know what time that is.
I don't
know. The Rockwell.
It's, you know, just one thing after another. And then, luckily, on Sunday morning at 10:30, there's restorative yoga at the Yoga Path. There's the weekly ukulele jam over at the T.K. McGuire's at 11, and more salsa rueda. And then, as you mentioned, the Conbrio thing at Northern Light Church from 3 to 5. There's a monologue class that Enrica Bravo is teaching over at Perseverance Theater. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. It's part of their theater drama school. So it's a new opportunity to try. On Monday, yoga immersion, Tlingit language learners, makerspace, open shop. There's abstract figure painting with Chris Taylor and a mental health film feature. 2 days, one night. This is over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. So Tuesday, free Tai Chi for seniors, Haida Language Tuesdays, the JDHS band concert at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Are you tired yet?
No, what I'm thinking about, she's looking at me, what I'm thinking about is I think we should dispatch one family to do everything on the jack. I think this should be like something that maybe Scott Burden or Annie should do, that just dispatch a family to do everything on the arts program and report back after, you know, they sleep for 2 days.
You know, in fact, I think Dan Beeson is probably a person in town who does most of these things. He's pretty amazing.
I'd like to talk with him.
On Wednesday, we've got Right for Your Life out at the Mendenhall Valley. There's a Reach job fair at the Canvas. And we just heard an ad for Dave McGraw and Mandy Furr. This is the start of the KRNN Spotlight series that's over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And we have Wildlife Wednesdays starting up. This one is the Dragonflies of Alaska. That's at the Mendenhall Public Library and the Old Time Music Jam at the Alaskan Hotel. So there.
There you go. One week of activity, Thursday to Thursday. So go to the calendar, the KTOO calendar or the JAHC.org calendar, and pick your poison because it is great.
We have a lot of wonderful things.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. So what is the next big show for the Juno Arts and Humanities Council?
We have an amazing a cappella group coming on October 24th. There was a little confusion about dates. It's Monday the 24th. It's four women. They sing in all kinds of different languages, but the harmonies, they are amazing. And we did actually, after the Modest Yahoo concert, get a comment from somebody saying, bring more harmony music. And it's like, well, here you go.
We're already doing that.
It's coming. Well, yeah. So it's going to be wonderful. It's at Thunder Mountain, so there's fewer tickets than usual. So go online. And I want to mention that we do have our season tickets on sale now. And Season ticket holders get big discounts on their ticket prices for the whole season, and you get invited to the Wearable Art very first pre-sale for tickets.
So you can get one of those tables if you want.
You can get one of those tables if you want. Yeah, and we are starting up on the Wearable Art stuff. If you're an artist and wondering when you can register, should be next week.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's coming right up.
And what are the membership levels? How much is it depending
on
the member?
Oh, it's, you know, generally speaking, I mean, they're just suggested. We have a senior or student rate of $20, an individual rate of $40, a family rate of $75. But, you know, pick your poison, do what you can. We aren't fussy.
Okay.
But, yeah, so okay. It's a nice cause, and you get involved in all sorts of stuff and get way more email than you used to if you needed that.
None of us get email. All right, we are going to take a short break. We're going to listen to Dave McGraw and Mandy Furr, who from their CD Off Grid Lo-Fi, and they are the Karen Spotlight series, the first ones of the whole series. So here we are.
Folk Festival at KRNN presents Falltoberfest 2016. Two nights of dance music to move your feet and fill your heart with performances by the Easy Leaves, Big Chimney Barn Dance, Gamble and the High Cost of Living, and the North Country Cajun Club. Friday, October 7th and Saturday, October 8th at the Rockwell Ballroom. Doors open at 7 p.m. both nights. Tickets at akfolkfest.org, Hearthside Books, The Jack, Rainy Retreat Books, and At the Door.
I'm Krista Tippett, host of On Being on KTOO News Juno. On Being is a spacious conversation about the great animating questions of life. What does it mean to be human, and how do we want to live together in this remarkable century? Each week I speak with scientists and theologians, artists and activists, parents and poets. Please join me Sunday afternoons at 1 here on KTOO News Juno.
You have been listening to Juno Afternoon. It's 6 minutes to the hour. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. So some outdoor activities for this weekend. Saturday, October 1st. Yes, we're there. Diamond Park and the path around the Fieldhouse are being used for the Juno Freewheeler Bicycle Club Cyclocross Bike Race from 2 to 4:30 this Saturday. The park will be open to the public during the race, which sounds like a lot of fun. And then there is the 8th annual Heastie Half Marathon, 5K and 1 mile fun run. This is at Savico Park, 8 to 2. And once again, park will be open. And this is Sunday, October 2nd. And this is more information. Call Parks and Rec. And also, beginning this Saturday, the Juno Douglas City Museum will begin fall hours, Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4, are their open hours. Okay, you have been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Tune in anytime at ktoo.org to hear more or listen to things on demand. The forecast, 56 degrees. It's sunny with a high near 56. Northeast wind around 20 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around 48. Northeast winds 25 to 30 miles per hour, increasing to 35 miles per hour after midnight. Friday, sunny with a high near 54. Winds 35 to 40 miles per hour with gusts as high as 60 miles per hour. We do have a high wind advisory from 1 a.m. tomorrow until 4 p.m. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low around 41. Saturday, sunny with a high near 53. Saturday night, mostly clear. Sunday, sunny. Sunday night, mostly cloudy. And then Monday, cloudy. There is not rain in the weekend forecast. Tomorrow, join Andy Klein on Juno Afternoon, always a party. He'll be talking about the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, the grand opening of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, the Black and White Gala fundraiser for the Bartlett Hospital Foundation, and get a preview of that Femme Fatale event, the drag show, locals on Friday, and then our Anchorage guests on Saturday. Thank you for tuning in to KTOO. Have a great day.